So what kind of universe do we live in? How did it get started? And what is our place in the larger scheme of things? These are among the greatest of cosmological questions. When we talk about cosmology, we are talking about the origin, the structure, and the destiny of the universe. Now, religions all around the world have long played a huge role in addressing these basic cosmological questions. But in more recent times, modern astronomy and astrophysics and cosmology have been superseding some of those older, more traditional religious cosmologies, which oftentimes simply centered themselves around a creator god of some sort who, as we just saw in our little Woody Allen sketch, in some quarters is getting harder and harder to find. So for our purposes today, I'm going to take the more contemporary scientific approach to cosmology, which I view not only as good science, but as a sacred narrative in itself. This is our cosmology, I would argue. This is something that we should know about. To get a feel for the big picture of the nature and origins of the universe and of our place in it, let me start with the Big Bang. The Big Bang is now quite well established as the leading theory about how the physical universe came to be. Now, to describe the Big Bang, I'm going to rely primarily on Bill Bryson, a best-selling author whom some of you may know, who does a great job of describing the Big Bang in his book called A Short History of Nearly Everything. Secondarily, I'm going to draw on Mark Whittle's wonderful three-volume series of books called Cosmology, The History and Nature of Our Universe. So those are my two primary sources. So Bill Bryson starts his description of the Big Bang with a single proton. Now, a single proton is really, really small. A proton, as you may recall, is one of the constituent parts of an atom, which in itself is pretty small. Bryson explains just how small a proton is. Protons are so small, according to Bryson, that the dot on a letter I in a printed book or in your order of service, for example, the dot on an I can hold something in the neighborhood of 500 billion protons. Billion with a B. Which, for perspective, is more than the number of seconds contained in 500,000 years. So in other words, that's a lot of protons, okay? A lot of protons on the top of an eye. So if we could put that many protons on the top of an eye, then let us agree from the outset that protons are really, really small. Okay? Keep that in mind because we're going to build on that. Now, imagine, if you can, shrinking just one of those protons down to 1/1,000,000,000th of its normal size, which we already agreed was really small, right? So this is really, really small. Now, pack into that tiny, 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 tiny space about an ounce of matter, okay? We don't know where it came from exactly, but pack about an ounce into that really, really small space, and we're ready to go. We're ready to start a universe. As Bryson suggests, it is natural, but it's wrong, to visualize our starting point for the Big Bang, as a kind of a pregnant dot hanging in a dark, boundless void. It's natural to think that way, to visualize that, but it happens to be wrong. Because at this point, prior to the Big Bang, there is no space. Say what? There is no space. Now, why is that? Well, because space, as Einstein proved, is inextricably bound up with time and matter. And at this point, before the Big Bang, we have neither. We don't have any time and we don't have any matter. Because it's before the Big Bang. In other words, our point of singularity, that little tiny, tiny space, that's what they call it, a point of singularity, has no around it. But just tuck that away and we'll keep going, okay? We can't even ask how long that pregnant dot has been there, whether it just lately popped into existence or whether it's been silently, you know, waiting forever, ready to move into the next, you know, phase, the Big Bang. Why can't we ask how long it has been there? Well, again, because at this point, like space, time doesn't exist yet either. In any case, as weird as it may sound, without time, without matter, without space, basically from essentially nothing, the universe is ready to go. It begins. In a single blinding pulse, as Bryson puts it, in a moment of glory, much too swift and expansive for words, the point of singularity assumes gargantuan dimensions, flowing outwards in a flash. This Big Bang, according to the so-called inflation theory of Alan Guth, was actually not an explosion. It was not actually a bang, they don't think anymore. Rather, it was a vast, sudden expansion on a whopping scale. So they argue that it probably was much more of a giant whoosh than a big bang. Now the whole initial Big Bang or Big Whoosh episode may have lasted, they believe, no more than 10 to the negative 30 seconds. 10 to the negative 30 seconds. For those of you who are counting, that is 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, So from this really, 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 really small place, 1/1,000,000,000th the size of a single proton, we get a universe in a really, 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 really short time. Moving forward from the Big Bang, in the first fulsome 1 second of the universe's young life, is produced gravity and the other three basic forces that govern physics, namely electromagnetism and what are called the strong and the weak forces, which are forces that bind protons into atomic nuclei and electrons to atoms. Now that's in the first 1 second. In less than a minute, the universe is now at least 100 billion light years across. 100 billion light years. And it is growing fast. Very fast. There's also a lot of heat now as well. 10 billion degrees of it. Enough to begin the nuclear reactions that create the lighter elements. Principally hydrogen and helium with a dash of lithium. That's within the first 1 minute. Within 3 minutes, 98% of all of the matter that there is or ever will be in our universe has been produced. In short, within 3 minutes, we have a universe. Isn't that great? So that's the Big Bang Theory. I mean, kind of a high-level look at it. This is how the universe, to the best of our knowledge, came to be. But another big cosmological question is, what caused the Big Bang? What set it off? Or another way of asking the same question is, what was before the Big Bang? Well, one notion. There are several, but one notion is that perhaps the point of singularity was a relic from an earlier collapsed universe. That our universe is just one manifestation, in other words, of an eternal cycle, perhaps, of expanding and collapsing universes. Others attribute the Big Bang to what they call variously a false vacuum, a scalar field, or a vacuum energy. I have no idea what these things are. But they're described as a quality or a thing, at any rate, that somehow introduced a measure of instability into the nothingness that was, and flipped the universe out of the nothingness. Right. Or it may be that our universe is merely part of many other universes, the so-called multiverse, some perhaps even in different dimensions, and that Big Bangs are actually going on all the time, all over the place. Or it may be that space and time had some other forms altogether before the Big Bang, forms too alien for us to even imagine, and that therefore the Big Bang represents some sort of transition phase where the universe went from a form that we can't even imagine to one that we almost can imagine. So it's a transitional phase thing. In short, what caused the Big Bang? What came before the Big Bang? They really don't know. They really have all these various ideas, but they're pretty sketchy. Okay, let's bring this down to earth a bit and try to begin to understand our place as human beings in the universe. If the Big Bang occurred, as it did, about 14 billion years ago, then two other cosmological questions that are especially important for human beings are, when and how did the Earth come about? Well, the answer goes something like this. About 4.6 billion years ago, a huge swirl of gas and dust, some 15 billion miles across, started to gradually accumulate in space and started coming together, this dust and gas, in what would turn out to be our vicinity of the Milky Way galaxy. Virtually all of this gas and dust, 99.9% of its mass, would eventually go into making up our sun. Out of the remaining material that was left over, two microscopic grains of dust eventually floated close enough together to be joined by either electrostatic or gravitational forces. And this, friends, these little dust particles coming together is the moment of conception of our planet Earth. Okay? All over the inchoate solar system, the same thing was happening. Colliding grains of dust gradually coming together and forming larger and larger clumps, starting very small but getting larger. And eventually the clumps grew large enough to become what scientists now call planetesimals. And these small planetesimals, these small planets in effect, endlessly bumped and collided into one another, they split apart or they recombined in endless random permutations. But in every such encounter, there was a winner of sorts, and some of the winners grew big enough to eventually dominate the orbit around which they traveled. To grow from a tiny cluster of dust grains to a baby planet some hundreds of miles across is thought to have taken some tens of thousands of years. In about 200 million years, possibly a little less, the Earth was essentially formed, although it was at that point still molten, very hot, and subject to constant bombardment from all of the debris that still remained floating around, circling the sun. Continuing our narrative of planet Earth, at this point, about 4.5 billion years ago, an odd thing happened. An object the size of Mars crashed into the Earth, blowing out enough matter into space to form a companion sphere, which we now know, of course, as our moon. Within weeks, it is thought, the flung material had reassembled itself into a single clump, and within a year, it had formed into a spherical rock that continues to orbit the Earth and to light up our night sky with light reflected, of course, from the sun. Continuing forward, for the next 500 million years or so, our young Earth continued to be relentlessly bombarded by comets and meteorites and other galactic debris, which sounds kind of nasty and inhospitable, but actually was very fortunate because that's what brought water to fill our, what we know now as our oceans. And it also brought other components that were necessary for the successful formation, ultimately, of life. So, just as, I suppose, in our own lives, some of our greatest growth experiences come paradoxically in times of turmoil, so too it was in a singularly hostile and chaotic environment that the components necessary for life came together, and somehow, we don't really know how, there's some theories, but somehow life got going here on planet Earth. As Bill Bryson understatedly puts it, he says, and I quote, "Some tiny bag of chemicals twitched and became animate, and we were on our way." That, according to Bryson, was the beginning of life on Earth. Continuing forward, 4 billion years later, now I'm really picking up the pace here, through the wonders of evolution, which we're all pretty, at least dimly aware of how the species change forms as time went along and so forth and so on. But eventually, we have another big development, which is when somehow consciousness came about. The consciousness, the ability to reflect and reflect on our own existence. Okay, so now we have some idea of how and when the universe and the earth began. So let's try to put it together into some kind of perspective so that we can get a little better understanding of our place as human beings in the larger scheme of things here. And again, let me draw at this point on Bill Bryson. Bryson says that if we imagine not the whole history of the universe, but if we imagine just the 4.6 billion odd years of Earth's history, and we imagine that 4.5 billion years or so compressed into a 24-hour clock, okay? A day, one day, the whole history of Earth, one day, then, interestingly enough, life actually begins on Earth relatively early, at 4 a.m., with the rise of the first simple, single-celled organisms. But then, oddly enough, life then advances no further, or only negligibly, for the next 16 hours of our 24-hour day. Not until almost 8:30 in the evening, so you're only around the clock there, with the day 5/6 over, has Earth anything to show the universe but a kind of a restless skin of microscopic microbes. And then finally, around 8:30 p.m., the first sea plants appear. Plants growing in the sea, followed 20 minutes later by the first jellyfish and the so-called Ediacaran fauna. At 9:04 p.m., half hour later, trilobites swim onto the scene, followed more or less immediately by various other curious, simple creatures. Just before 10 p.m., plants begin to pop up on land. Soon after, with less than 2 hours left in the day, the first land creatures arrive. Thanks to 10 minutes or so of balmy weather, by 10:24 p.m., the Earth is covered in the great carboniferous forests whose residues give us all of our coal and our carbon. It's at this point in our 24-hour day that the first winged insects become evident. Then dinosaurs plod onto the scene just before 11 p.m. and hold sway for about 3/4 of an hour. At 21 minutes to midnight, the dinosaurs vanish and the age of mammals begins. Meanwhile, throughout this greatly speeded up day of our Earth's history, we must imagine, as Bryson points out, that the continents, picture the continents, well, they're slipping and sliding around and banging together and at a clip that is positively reckless. You know, mountains go up and down and melt away, and ocean basins come and go, and ice sheets advance and withdraw. You know, it's that time-lapse photography. You can just imagine all these things going on. And finally, 1 minute and 17 seconds before midnight, that's 77 seconds before midnight, ta-da! Humans finally arrive. 77 seconds. before midnight, in that 24-hour clock of our histories, of our Earth's history. Not only that, but I find this astonishing. Approximately 98% of all human developmental history occurs before the invention of agriculture. In other words, most of our existence, 98% of it, as human beings, was before we ever learned how to plant crops. So it's only 2% of our existence has been since then. Another way to put it is that the whole of our recorded history and civilization, all of our art and science and music and dance and literature and technology and everything, all of this has lasted, so far anyway, no more than a few seconds in duration, bringing us to midnight and to the present in 2012. So let us clearly acknowledge that we are but newcomers on the cosmic scene. Now, admittedly, the vastness of space and time are sometimes mind-numbingly daunting, causing us, perhaps, to feel small and insignificant. Nevertheless, I invite you to consider that things like stars and galaxies and supergalaxies, while clearly impressively large and distant, bright and old, that these stars and so forth, nevertheless, are extremely simple things. They're very simple compared, say, to an integrated circuit of a computer, or compared to a human cell, let alone compared to the complexity of the human brain. Indeed, as Professor Mark Whittle suggests, if things were made to shine with a brightness proportional to their complexity rather than proportional to their size or their energy, then stars and galaxies and supergalaxies would be but dim 15-watt light bulbs, while our brains would shine out like blinding quasars across the universe. So, in short, while clearly we are relatively new to the cosmic scene, it is equally clear, I would suggest, that in an amazingly short time, remember those just few seconds before midnight, in an amazingly short time, through evolution, we have achieved an astonishing complexity. A complexity that has brought, among other things, matter to consciousness, which is huge. A subtle and fairly intelligent consciousness, capable of reflecting upon itself, capable of asking the kind of deep cosmological questions that we've been asking today. A consciousness capable, moreover, of reveling, as I do, in the glory of the incredibly wondrous universe that we know as our home.